Hello, and welcome to River Writers, a production of the Writers Guild of Astoria, a 501c3 nonprofit supporting writers and the literary arts in Astoria and the Lower Columbia region. I'm your host, Marianne Monson. Aired the second Monday of each month at 9 a.m., River Writers provides a chance to peek behind the curtain at the craft of writing. What motivates writers to do the work they do, and what have they learned through their creative process? I'm happy to have in the studio with me today Astoria-based Logan Garner, who is a poet, and he's the author of the poetry collections Here in the Floodplain, as well as the forthcoming The Sin of Feeding Wild Birds. Welcome, Logan.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, it's great to have you. And while I have you here, I'll give a shout out to the fact that you are on the board at the Writers Guild, where you work on development and grants for us. And we really appreciate your service to the literary community here in a myriad of ways.
Absolutely. Thank you. I'm happy to be a part of it. I am very grateful for it.
Well, it's a pleasure to talk with you. Logan, you are not an Astorian native, right? You're originally from the Midwest, yeah?
That's right. Yeah. I came out here about 10 years ago with my wife from Indiana. Mm-hmm. And that's where I was raised, a little farm town called Alexandria. And we came out this way, just looking for something different. I was looking for work in Alaska. You know, she really wanted to go visit the Southwest and maybe move down that way. And the lower Pacific Northwest was our compromise. And it's been amazing.
Yeah. Now it's hard to imagine this place without you, actually.
No, thanks.
So now that you live in Astoria, and you said going on about 10 years,
Yeah.
You've seen quite a few changes in this little town.
Yeah. And, you know, when we showed up, I found a job at a local brewery, and I just tried to kind of enmesh myself in the community, did a lot of volunteering. We found a place for ourselves and got a house, you know, before everything kind of took off and got really lucky there. But it just is the type of community that makes you just kind of want to dig in and be involved. And there's so much here that outpaces the size of this town.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like the arts and culture and food and beer and music and everything. And so, it's a hard place not to love.
Yeah. Know? It is. It is a hard place not to love. So I'm curious, with the 10 years that you've spent here, how do you feel the landscape of this region impacts your artistic work?
Oh, man. Well, that's a big one. I think first and foremost, I'm a nature poet and a place-based poet. And this place just gives and gives and gives. Mm-hmm. So the landscape here, so, I mean, as you know, it's where the river meets the ocean, and mm-hmm. we're surrounded by mountains and, you know, water in general. And there are just more shades of green than can be named around this place. And so, I come from a state where it's flat, and 80% of the land use is corn and soybeans, and it just couldn't be more different. Mm. And so when I'm out in the world, I kind of get a sense of bigness and largeness, around me. And I think by comparison, then I feel very small, but not in any kind of negative way. It's just, it's nice to feel lost in such a big, beautiful place.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's, I think I end up doing that just over and over with different poems, is finding something small to focus on or attend to, so that it doesn't get lost in the big picture or the landscape. But those are certainly settings.
Yeah. Yeah. I've read that estuaries, like the one where we live near, is they are among the most like rich and diverse, biodiverse ecosystems in the entire world.
Yeah.
And I think it's so interesting how that landscape like feeds the animal life and the plant life and the human life too, right? It enriches all of us.
Yeah. You nailed it. And I think, people like, we have so many great writers in this community, but people like Robert Michael Pyle and, ecologist and equal parts ecologist and writer and mm-hmm. poet and but we're surrounded by people who are just celebrating that constantly. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, you look around and the biodiversity here alone is, you know, again, I'm comparing it to the Midwest. It feels surreal to me sometimes.
Yeah.
I have to pinch myself and remind myself that it wasn't normal for me to see sea lions and eagles and whales, and, you know, and ospreys. And I'm always in danger of getting used to it, you know. So.
Or maybe it was normal, right? And the other way that it's possible to live in America is not normal, actually.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Well said.
I wonder that. Like, I just feel, I think that those kinds of landscapes, they feed our souls and they help center us. And I think that that is maybe really important right now.
And yeah, so important.
A lot of folks need to get out and spend a little bit more time with the amazing natural resources that we have in the United States of America.
Yeah, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. So your first poetry collection is called Here in the Floodplain. Yeah. So is that a reference to the estuary that we're talking about?
Yeah, it's a reference to, you know, the part of the community right where my house sits, actually.
Tell us about that.
Sure. So this collection is, you know, very, very place-based again, but it's a chapbook that's full of just moments and examinations of my life here and this community and both the, you know, the natural world and the societal aspect of it. But you know, where my house sits is in a floodplain, and when it's raining and it's high tide, the water, that you know, the grass is underwater. You know, in the wintertime, it's nuts. And when the tide is low, my yard is bone dry, and it's just it's a strange thing to be on land and not very high above sea level, but to still see the tides in your, you know, on your lawn, essentially. And I don't know how many people make that connection. I certainly didn't for the longest time, but I realized, man, it rains so much in the winter. That's why our yard is always wet. And I started hearing people talk about, oh, well, the tide was up, so the water table was really up. And I thought, holy cow, it's like it's like a clock. Every 12 hours when we get rain, it's I watch that water level go up and down. And something just clicked that I was a part of this in a way that I wasn't even aware. And I started measuring time by it, you know, in a sense. And it had me looking at all kinds of things differently after that. Like, what is it that I'm not noticing around here in this beautiful, rich place? And so, these are kind of poems full of those kind of noticings, I guess.
Poems of noticings. I like that a lot. Yeah, and I think sometimes in the modern world, it's just really easy to get disconnected from those natural earth cycles, right?
Yeah.
But it sounds like with where you live, you have a constant visual reminder of that.
Yeah, I feel very lucky. And I do have to be reminded, though. I'm not, you know. I do have to be reminded.
We all get busy and distracted and
sure.
Yeah. Have jobs and things like that.
Yeah. The modern world pulls us away.
Few of us have the luxury of writing poetry full time, but yeah. So tell us how this collection came about. So you told us kind of like the inspiration behind it, but then how did it physically make its way into a book?
Oh gosh. Well, you know, I actually, can I digress a little bit?
Sure, please do. We love digressions.
Oh, good. you know, I grew up reading poetry from a young age, and I went from like Shel Silverstein, excuse me, to Walt Whitman, like instantly, almost. I remember, and then from then on, I was just, you know, in it. And
I can see Shel Silverstein like being a good gateway for
what a
for Walt
delightful
Whitman.
And
you
silly.
Know, like they both have a lot of wonderful wordplay.
Oh yeah,
so,
and
yeah.
You know, being a little boy and just yeah, it was just fun. But then I realized, oh my gosh, there's real, you know, quote unquote real or serious poetry that I would just come across it and read so much even at a young age. But I didn't come to writing poetry until I was in college, really, and I didn't earnestly spend time on it or submit my poetry until the pandemic. And so I am late to the game.
Mm-hmm.
And these are some of my first poems that I didn't just scrap, essentially. Mm-hmm. I was having this kind of growing relationship with my home here and, you know, my adopted home and this community, you know, not all of it's nature-based, but this community in general. And these are the poems that I decided I still liked after all, you know, for all their, you know, warts and flaws, I still like these poems. And so I put it out, in the world to several small presses, and there is one, called Plan B Press, and all they want to do is support emerging poets, and they do chapbooks. It's, you know, they give you a chance to have a collection.
Wow.
And that
great.
Is their mission, and they're wonderful. And, they, you know, I got a voicemail one day, and it was a call I had missed, and it was this gentleman saying, "Hey, I think these have some potential. We'd love to print it." And I about fell over. So ever since I was a little kid, I said, you know, I want to be a published author, and you know, just want, you know, I want to live by the ocean, and and that was the moment I was like, "Holy cow, I did
all
it.
My dreams are
here.
Coming true."
Yeah, yeah. But yeah, this was just kind of the first fruit of me deciding I'm going to write every day.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to give it serious time and attention, and it really has, this has been kind of my window and my doorway. I'm very grateful for it.
Yeah. Wonderful. Why don't you read us something from the, from the book?
Yeah, I'd love to. I'll read the title, poem,
yeah,
if that's okay.
Yeah, please do. That'd be great.
It is the poem for which the book is named, and it's called Here in the Floodplain. Here in the floodplain, where sand dominates the soil, we grow wildflowers and sit on red bricks, spines bent over books, while a pig and some dogs push their noses around our tiny plot of land. The house has been settling too, cinders slight downward with every 100 passes of trucked tons of earth from down the street where a big box store will be. You can roll a marble south to northwest on our kitchen floor, as reliably as you can find the round, desiccated things that have journeyed beneath the refrigerator. Seeds of small hidden projects, which threaten to grow into expensive realities of pine and copper and steel and plywood. At 8 feet above the sea, and not more than a crow flying mile from the compulsive waves, we get to feel apart. Right outside our door, when the wind carries a faint drone whispering salt, or when it rains angry and the tide is in, water table riding high, and we sit and look at the moat in the yard. That's when we and a pig and some dogs all cloister ourselves, each in their own space, to nest and burrow and close our eyes for a time.
Lovely. Thank you. You know, I love the just close observations of daily life that you capture in that
Thanks.
Poem. It's really easy to just picture you and your wife and your animals and your little house in the floodplain.
Thanks. Yeah, it's quite literal. You know, it's one of those moments where I thought, wow, this is just a part of my daily life, and it really is beautiful. And I felt worth taking notes and jotting down. And of course, it took a while to come to this state, but
it was
a happy labor. Yeah.
Yeah. It reminded me that one of my professors in grad school would talk about how a lot of times with writing, we think we have to have some new, big, grandiose idea that is outside of us and outside of our lives. But what is really most interesting is just normal life closely observed,
yeah.
You know, it's just,
oh, I love that.
Yeah. It's like those photographs of small, beautiful plants dripping with dew, you know, in the forest.
That kind of macro lens.
Yeah. The macro lens. Yeah. That's what I was looking for. Yeah.
Yeah.
Just that close observation of everyday life.
Yeah. I love that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Which is, I don't know, feels more precious than ever to me right now. For those of you just joining us, this is Marianne Monson for KMUN's River Writers, sponsored by the Writers Guild. And this morning I'm speaking with poet Logan Garner. So, Logan, you talked a little bit about how you came to writing, but is there anything else you want to tell us about, you know, that writing journey and how it first began for you? It sounds like you've been a reader of poetry for quite a long time, since Shel Silverstein days.
Yeah, sure. I was an avid reader since I can remember, and you know, I have two distinct memories. Even as a little boy, in third grade, I think, you know, I did write poetry a little bit as a kid. Because in third grade, I got a poem accepted into an anthology, you know, for young students. Yeah. And I think a lot of schools participate in those. But I remember feeling so proud. And but then I also, I think I wrote a story around Halloween in second or third grade, and it got it earned me a call home to my parents.
Oh, really?
Because it wasn't, I think it was kind of rough. But, but I, you know, I was trying to get into the spirit of the season and make it real spooky. And I think it got a little dark for my teacher. But even as a little kid, I did this, you know, and I kept journals growing up. But you know, I was raised in a very strict Catholic household. And, you know, all the, you know, church every Sunday, of course, but all the holy days, and I was an altar boy, and read the readings at Mass, and did all the things. And so, you know, there was a time when, for a long time in my life, I was considering the priesthood, and I was reading books on theology, and I was, of course, reading poetry, and I think for me, I started spending so much time being introspective, I guess examining new perspectives and viewpoints, and eventually that led me away from religion. You know, those kind of critical thinking and observation skills. But at the same time, it really just I never could quite turn it off. And so I think, you know, when I was in college and started writing consistently, and then during the pandemic when I was writing poetry consistently, I was kind of drawing on those same perspectives and skills that I found I had developed, you know, as a young man who felt very spiritual and religious, and I don't have that piece anymore, but I think I find a lot of value in the natural world, as you know, it's a sacred thing in and of itself. And so I think, you know, in terms of my writing journey, those are the things I just kept focusing on, and it felt I'm not sure the word, I guess, but it felt like I was exploring something and getting to know myself in ways that felt meaningful and valuable. But you know, and that's probably, if you know, a lot of my poems have a lot of symbolism or around ritual, or, you know, they sound very Catholic, some of them, in terms of just individual word choices. But I think that's why. I think I found this wonderful meaning from something else, and it turned into writing. It turned into spending time with nature and, you know, poking around. What a beautiful thing to do. And it just kind of directed the poets I read and the novels I read and the things I wrote. Because I don't have any formal training, really. You know.
Yeah, because you didn't study. I was just going to say, you know, I think that's really interesting, the way that you connect your religious upbringing to your writing practice. You know, I also grew up in a really conservative religious family where that practice was really important part of our daily life. And I think, like, at its heart, spirituality and religion is about connecting to self and connecting to something bigger than ourselves, you know?
Sure.
And so I think that it makes a lot of sense to tie that into any creative writing or any creative practice, rather, you know?
Yeah, I agree. That's, I don't know where else I would have gotten it from. So,
yeah.
You know, and I think, it stays with me. You know, I carry parts of home with me.
Yeah.
I guess we all do. But the landscape and the natural world and organized religion, I guess, done me some favors, regardless of how I feel about the latter now. But
Yeah, that's really beautiful. I appreciate that. So yeah, but then you said you didn't formally study it in school. So, and that kind of, so your day job is now grant writing though, yeah. Which is kind of interesting.
Yeah. So, you know, I got a degree in, is called Science, Technology and Society Studies, mm-hmm. and it was a, and philosophy, as well, but.
The philosophy makes sense.
Yeah, that lends
the
itself for sure.
The poet's philosopher, yeah. You know, connection. There's a strong tie with between those
certainly,
two.
Certainly, yeah.
Practices.
Yeah, and the other one was a science communication degree, essentially. So I, you know, lots of rhetoric and writing involved in my education, but yeah, everything that was truly, you know, creative writing, I just was putting in my, you know, I'm putting in my 10,000 hours, as they say. You know?
Yeah, yeah. Well, the thing that's amazing is it's like you put in 10,000 hours and realize that you want to put in 10,000 more, you
heck
know?
Yeah.
And there's just never an end to it. There's never a, you can never reach just the pinnacle of it.
Yeah,
there's always more. Yeah, what a happy thing. It's true. But I think that makes sense why, you know, you gravitate towards, you know, that happy medium between science writing and poetry, you know?
Yeah. Well, thank you.
Yeah.
I like hearing that, if I'm honest. Yeah.
There are a lot of amazing scientists turned writers, you
sure,
know? And
yeah.
And I think what science and poetry have in common is that close observation of the natural world, you know? And maybe a love affair with the precision of language. You know, I really admire that in scientific writing, too.
Yeah, I guess. I don't know how I haven't, you know, articulated that to myself at any point. Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't want to give that. I think it's Mark Twain who said the difference between the right word and the almost right word is a large matter of degree, and it's the difference between lightning and lightning bug.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
I like that a lot. Yep. You have to keep revising and get it right. Actually, so why don't you talk a little bit about your writing process? What does your writing life and your writing practice look like these days?
Sure. I make sure I give myself, I don't do anything really formal or structured. I just, I make sure I give myself some time every day. But you know, for me, I'm kind of a night owl. I wish I was a morning person, but I'm not. And I've tried, but you know, I think, for me, I will sit and read. And when I'm reading things that strike a chord, I always have a notebook nearby and I'm always taking notes. I carry a notebook around with me. And, so that's always something, but, you know, when I reach a point where I think, oh, this could be something, or there's something I notice or something I want to kind of hold on to, it goes in the notebook. And I didn't always do this, but recently I bought a typewriter, and I've just been saying, I'm going to do my first draft on a typewriter because it forces me to just no backspace, no editing, you know, and there's kind of some fun because the novelty of a typewriter is exactly that. It's novel these days, but it doesn't let me do any, editing in place, really. It's just get it out. And that's been actually really helpful. If I'm not allowed to do anything but get the draft out, that's always great. And then I discard the typewriter immediately and I use my laptop, or more notebook drafts. But I force myself to at least do that. In terms of being productive and just allowing myself to just kind of, for lack of a better word, vomit out that terrible first draft that I'm going to look down at later. It's a great starter. So I've been doing that for a while, and that's been a lot
of fun.
That's
interesting. Yeah. I haven't heard that one before. Yeah. So first draft, like the vomit draft on the typewriter.
Yeah.
So you're kind of, I mean, the thing that's neat about the typewriter these days is that you're essentially like typesetting it while you revise. Do you feel like that helps you? Is it kind of a tool of revision to see it visually on the page like that?
Yeah, I think part of it is it's almost that same feeling of writing and like doing something longhand, because it's just this very, you're putting it down in real time, and once it's there, it's there. And I think for me at least, it almost feels like when I'm reading a poem out loud. Mm-hmm. Do you ever write something and you think, this is great? And as soon as you read it out loud, you think, oh, it needs work. It needs so much more work than I thought.
Always. I usually am like editing as I read aloud. You know, I'll change word orders. It's so such a helpful revision tool to read to read it out loud.
I mean, I think I did that reading this poem. I think I left a word out and I thought, oh, that sounds better. and I'll probably always do that. But yeah. But I think doing that, it forces my brain to slow down just enough where I notice the language a little with a little more honesty, I think, than I would otherwise if I was just typing as fast as I can on a laptop. And for whatever reason, it feels like it works for me. Mm-hmm. If it's just the placebo effect and I'm not doing anything different, I'm still okay with it because it feels good.
Hey, whatever works is what you should do. So, yeah, I'm going to try that. I think that's a good idea. Because a lot of times I'll write, I write the first draft of my poems longhand, like in a journal always. Yeah. And then I type them on a computer and then I print them. But it seems like you're just kind of skipping that step. You know?
Well, I guess, I mean, you know, I'm kind of... I usually have some notes too in a journal or something, but you know, when you're typing something out, you're kind of just printing it yourself one word at a time. So
that's what I mean.
So I guess it is kind of that same deal.
So you have a new poetry collection coming out. Congratulations.
Yeah, thank you.
Tell us about that.
It's called The Sin of Feeding Wild Birds, and it's my first full length collection. So I'm very excited. And it's coming out from Broken Tribe Press.
Wonderful.
When
will it be out?
In May.
Okay.
I don't know the date yet. They are they're a press run by a gentleman named Bill Lawrence, and he's a professor in North Carolina State University. And he's, you know, it's a press that's existed, but I think he's newly acquired it and has a whole slew of new authors that he's putting out. So I'm happy
Wonderful.
To be one of them.
That's great. Okay, can you read us something from that collection?
Oh, sure. Yeah.
To close out.
Yeah. Oh, we're almost out, huh?
I know, it always goes so fast.
It does, truly. Well, this one's called Eden, Indiana.
Okay.
Eden, Indiana. Not the unincorporated township. I stumbled into Eden south of Pisgah Marsh. Honeysuckle, pawpaw, honeybees, woodcocks, even a skunk who simply trotted off. The land used to be wetland. There must be a spring here somewhere. I say used to be, like the soil, geology, hydrology, the landscape soul, don't all still make it so. But it was drained for monoculture farming in the late 19th century, and the 20th gave almost 80% of the state's land as a dowry. Still, these holy places persist. Some bits are dedicated, like Pisgah, tokens to soothe modern West that lives on the homes of histories of older cultures. Others like this place, a border grass lane between tax lots, guard well springs and sing green joys, bright and buzzing. The air is rarefied despite the low elevation, sanctity in a liminal space in spite of everything.
Beautiful. Thank you so much, Logan. That was just such a lovely way to end and ties back to so many themes that we've explored in this conversation
today. Out now.
Absolutely. Seems in line. And I'm very much looking forward to the new collection. So thank you, listeners, for joining us today for River Writers. And thanks to my guest, Logan Garner, for sitting down to talk about all things writing. The Writers Guild of Astoria is a 501c3 nonprofit promoting the literary arts and serving writers in the Lower Columbia region. You can learn more and become a member by visiting thewritersguild.org. Until next time, keep the words flowing and your pencils sharp. I'm Marianne Monson for River Writers.